What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Renegade Jukebox on the Renegade Pop Culture Podcast Network. My name is Mike. Joining me, as always, is Nick.
We sail into the black... Oh, wait, wrong album. Yeah, I think that... Let that be a sign of things to come, people.
Yep, we have reached the end, at least of this chapter, of the Machine Head retrospective. We are on to part 9, which is Catharsis.
An album we're still kind of living in the aftermath of, which it's hard to believe this thing's been out for 4 years. It feels like it came out yesterday.
I was just recalling like a conversation we were having about this when the album was released. I remember you comparing it to The Last Jedi in terms of its divisiveness.
Yeah, at the time, because we're just gonna tear the Band-Aid off, to be honest. This was that point in time where we were still dealing with Trump being a thing and just the general response of, oh, everything that is left-leaning is automatically bad by default, which I always just felt was kind of a straw man. You're really going to criticize this band for being left-leaning when literally Davidian exists, when Halo exists, when Darkness Within's not a political song, but it's literally about how music is more powerful than religion, when In Comes the Flood was on the previous album. I mean, are you really that shocked?
Seriously.
But before we really talk about the album, we've got to address a standalone single that is just disappointing.
Oh, yeah, we should probably talk about that first. So a single that came out 2 years before was called Is There Anybody Out There? I actually don't really have too much to say about this other than having this follow Bloodstone and Diamonds feels off.
Here's the thing. I knew something was off listening to this, and I really hate to give away something that happens much later on, but look, if anybody has access to a Wikipedia or just Google, period. Once Phil Demmel and Dave McLean leave Machine Head after this album, which more on that in a minute. When I first heard this song, honestly, I really noticed something felt off. It felt thin in comparison. Like it had what Machine Head have done on the previous four albums that we love, but just something didn't feel like it was connecting. It just kind of felt like, okay, you're just repeating kind of the melody part, okay, heavy part, okay, you're just literally just verse chorus verse chorus verse breakdown chorusing us.
I have to ask, how involved were Phil and Dave in writing this track?
Apparently not very.
We'll probably get into that a little bit more, because that I imagine that's a lot of the reason why they said, you know what, we're out of here.
Yeah, I mean, this literally feels just apparent from what I recall of one interview. I'm completely paraphrasing the guy, so don't take my words verbatim, but apparently he had so little involvement writing this thing, he didn't even know that there was a music video that was supposed to be shot.
Wow.
And said music video never even came out.
That's even worse.
Yeah, so this is kind of a sign of things to come. I mean, my thing that a lot of people shit on that song for, and I feel like, okay, this is kind of you should be more shitting on this song for just being why Machine Head should never write radio singles and should have just either stuck to what they did best or, you know, just wrote a genuinely heavy song instead. going after the song because Rob had the nerve to call out Phil Anselmo from Pantera for doing that white power shit at Dime Bash. Yeah, that's a bullshit reason to hate a song, especially when Phil Anselmo did something genuinely racist and shitty.
Yeah, I was gonna say you shouldn't hate a song for that sort of reason. If anything, that's kind of bonus points for me.
Oh, definitely. I agree with that 100%. I mean, we're here to review music, not politics, but at the same time, you have to have some kind of a moral compass. You don't get to just go on power and belt out white power and then just say, no, I really meant white wine. It's like, Phil, shut the fuck up. Quit embarrassing us Pantera fans. No, just stop. But then we get a year later, we get news that Catharsis is going to be coming out at the very beginning of January 2018. We might as well just get into talking about this album, because with this in mind, I'm just going to kind of cut into my thoughts very briefly. This is not worse than Supercharger. A lot of people will tell you this is... don't believe fucking, like, I was a fan of Cover Killer Nation when he was making videos on YouTube, but him calling this one of the worst albums of the decade, calling it a disappointment, I would have understood and agreed with. Worst album of the no, considering that Five Finger Donkey Punch put out And Justice for None in the same year, considering Attila still make music, yeah, this is far from the worst thing I've ever heard.
Oh, of course not. And the good news is, as is the case with every Machine Head album, the opener is a banger. Volatile is... When I was listening to Volatile, I for a split second thought, okay, if the rest of the album sounds like this, then we have nothing to worry about.
Oh, yeah, even after Phil Demmel quit the band, even he was saying, oh yeah, Volatile's a killer song, one of the best on the album for me. It's ridiculously heavy, it's confrontational in the lyrical content, especially the lyrical content, because I mean, Jesus Christ, this thing was, I was telling you, Mike, this was written literally the day after Charlottesville happened in 2017.
So he had a lot of ammunition to work with.
Well, I mean, how could you not be pissed off after seeing Nazis literally marching in the streets with fucking tiki torches? I mean, come on. I mean, it's a fair reaction, and it's a song that's ridiculously heavy and confrontational like any political Machine Head song. And it's got a killer solo from Phil Demmel. So, yeah, Volatile. It's a killer.
Yeah. Really, really not a whole lot else to add. Just, you know, this is just a song that plays to all of their strengths.
Yeah, which with that in mind, I get that Rob didn't want this album to just kind of feel like a rehash of the previous four, with having a song with an overly long intro dedicated to it and then it cuts into the heavy stuff. But I do think Catharsis should have been the opening track, because it is kind of jarring.
Yeah, it is pretty obvious, like, in hindsight, knowing that Volatile was a last minute addition. Catharsis really does kind of feel like, oh, so this is like the actual start of the record.
Yeah, that's the main thing that I will criticize about this album, is that it really does feel kind of all over the place in terms of just album flow, which is, it is shocking after Unto the Locust and Bloodstone. I don't want to compare this to the Blackening, because I do feel like that's kind of unfair, and the band did make obvious steps to move past just, oh, look at how great the Blackening is. But hey, look at our other records. They're also really good. This more is just, I don't understand the thought process behind the track list flow.
That and this album is bloated. Like, it is, I believe they're long. Well, it is runtime wise, it's definitely their longest, but track list wise, yeah. If you cut this down to like, I don't know, 10 tracks, it would have been like right in line with like your average Machine Head record.
Well, average for them, I guess, but
yeah, relatively speaking.
As for the title track itself, even when it came out, I dug the title track.
It's good. I don't feel it had like the same energy as songs from like the previous records, but it at the very least sounds like Machine Head.
Oh yeah, and just the chorus is massive. I think that if Machine Head were to go in a direction of more massive and arena sounding and dial the prog stuff basic, because there's no prog happening on this album except for one song, which we will be discussing in a hot minute, but no, prog is basically swept out of the band's sound at this point. It's apparently Rob's mindset recording this was, let's not play fast on it, and I do kind of feel like that is a bit of a detriment to it.
Yeah, I get like wanting to take the music in a new direction, because any creative person will get bored of doing the same thing ad nauseum. However, you still kind of have to cater to your audience a little bit. Like,
the main thing that I kind of feel about just kind of getting past the first three songs is eventually you just start to go, does Catharsis really have much of a metal genre? I mean, I do know that I know that Decibel magazine called this album rap metal, which beyond one other track we'll get into, this album's kind of all over the place in terms of style. Like, I guess you could throw it in the groove category, but at the same time, you kind of can't help but go like, I can't really pick on a sound for this album. I can't, you know, the way I describe Through the Ashes of Empires is like you're roaring back after a complete dud like Supercharger, and then the Blackening is just, you know, epic thrash, and then Unto the Locust is epic plus prog plus thrash, and then Bloodstone and Diamonds is like almost like arena, like in while still containing the thrash and prog of the previous record, which we haven't really talked much about the title track, but good song. It's one of the few really good tracks on here. Beyond the Pale, I feel like we should mention how similar the main riff is to Love by Strapping Young Lad.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, that is what's cited as the similar track, but I got a little bit of a Pantera vibe with the riff, but I guess you could say Devin Townsend was inspired by Pantera then too.
Actually, I got the Wikipedia page open and I remember interviews before this album came out. Apparently, Devin Townsend has gone on to say that Love's chorus was actually ripped off of the song City of Love from Yes. So, to quote Devin Townsend's words himself, we all basically just rip off Meshuggah.
Yeah, fair enough.
not a wrong point, but I like Beyond the Pale too. It's a, again, one of the actually heavy tunes on this album. I feel like you could take the five best songs on here, and just given how much Rob loves talking about, you know, hip-hop artists mainly just using like singles to boost their numbers on streaming platforms, I do feel like maybe Rob could have gotten away with this more as an EP.
It certainly wouldn't be as bloated if he just like just put out a couple songs and call it a day.
Yeah. And, you know, he could easily have just used these five songs to promote, you know, the proper new Machine Head album. But now we get into the, oh God, please don't, territory of this album. California Bleeding.
The song in which Phil Demmel famously said, fuck, I wish I could take my riff back.
Riffs. Plural. Because with that man, there's not just one riff. There is many riffs to be had. Now, the song musically could get away as, you know, as much as I dunk on Machine Head doing radio singles. I could have seen this one getting away being played on, could have been played on both Octane and Liquid Metal, and I would be okay with it getting played on both. I mean, the solo's killer on it. Even one of the riffs more towards the end of the song is really good on it. It's just the main thing that really brings it down. Rob, what the fuck are you doing with these lyrics, man?
to finish Phil's quote, so I think in that sense it just became a Rob Flynn solo project, and that isn't what I signed up for.
He's not wrong in that sense at all, because it's basically just about how dumb parts of California is, but he loves it, and bad sex jokes, I guess. I don't know. I feel like if Rob really wanted this album to be like one big political statement about the Trump administration, about, you know, how things were after he had gotten elected, I feel like a song like this could have been super well done, kind of like the way Burn My Eyes was. And I know it's unfair to compare that album to a classic, but considering this band literally just put out four classic albums back to back over 11 years. Yeah. Like, I know you can do better than this, Rob. What are you doing?
To quote Obi-Wan from Revenge of the Sith, you are the chosen one.
Now we get From This Day 2018.
Oh, triple beam. This song really just kind of frustrated me. I was interested in the lyrics, but it's very distracting how empty the actual music sounds.
It's kind of the opposite of California Bleeding, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, this is, again, kind of what we meant when we said that this album was directionless, kind of bloated. You get two kind of clunker songs with like completely opposite problems.
Yeah, because to kind of touch on the lyrical content, this actually kind of touches on why Rob quit Violence to start Machine Head, basically. From what I gather of the situation, because obviously in Oakland, everybody's basically a drug dealer there. So Rob basically gets into a fight with a gang in a drug deal and somebody gets stabbed. That's the story. And then eventually he gets a death threat saying that if you go on stage with Violence tonight, we're going to bomb you. And he basically just said, you know what, I quit the band, I'm out.
Honestly, pretty smart.
that's me paraphrasing the situation. There's probably a lot more nuance going than I just described, but that's the too long didn't read version of it, which could make for a really cool song, but most of Triple Beam is ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. Like, which could be cool, but it's just not an interesting riff. And Rob, I actually meant to say this when we were talking about From This Day, when we were doing the Burning Red episode. Rob Flynn is definitely not Fred Durst levels of bad, but he's no Eminem.
No, not even close.
You like the next song, but for me, honestly, the intro kind of kills the momentum it has.
You are not wrong. Yeah, the clapping intro on Kaleidoscope is the wrong way to start this, like, full stop. But if you can get past it, it's actually pretty solid. But I completely understand the jankiness of starting the song with, like, clapping in the intro. Almost makes it sound like you're listening to Bleed It Out by Linkin Park, except not as good.
Or just, you know, some generic, quote, alternative radio single, which, considering that Rob's approach to lyrics on this album was more hip-hop and hardcore punk, if he wanted to incorporate more of a hardcore punk kind of influence to that opening, it would have been just getting Dave to do, like, some, I don't know, something on the kick drums to introduce it. That would have sounded way cooler, and then the song would have benefited from it more. But even with the song's chorus in mind, I just feel like Machine Head have done this lyrical content better on other albums.
Yeah.
Musically, it was done better on Night of the Long Knives, on Bloodstone and Diamonds. Lyrically, it was done better on Darkness Within, on Unto the Locust. It just kind of does nothing for me.
Yeah, it's not a great song by any stretch, but it's
does have a great solo.
Yes, the solo is awesome.
Yeah, well, that anything Phil Demmel does on this album kind of at least makes it at least bearable to hear, because at least you're going, okay, Phil Demmel solo, Phil Demmel solo, Phil Demmel solo. Yes.
I'm not gonna lie, Phil, for as little as he contributes, like, in the actual writing,
he does contribute quite a bit. I'm just gonna jump in on this. He does contribute. It's just the way his contributions are kind of molded to the way Rob wants them to be is what kind of tanks the album.
Fair. But at least his musicianship is what saves us from being a total failure.
Which, how do we justify the next song? Because I
put down in my notes, am I still even listening to Machine Head? We're talking about Bastards, by the way.
Okay, I'm going to make this abundantly clear. And it's, I feel like how I described in our Eminem episode, how I felt about Revival. I 100% agree with the lyrical content here. I 100% support it. I hated that Trump won. I hated that basically the bullies won at the end of the day. The bad guys literally, I remember the night that the 2016 election happened and votes were being counted and how close of a call it was, and I remembered, God, I have to go to work, but, like, I gotta know if this asshole loses. And then I just wake up to text from my mom and my grandma going, bad news, Nick. And I'm like, the thing with Bastards, if this song had come out when Trump got elected, I would have just preferred to go listen to like Lamb of God or System of a Down instead.
Same.
I actually did that, by the way. I was so pissed. I was like, yeah, I'm putting on Hourglass right now. The thing with Bastards is that it's not necessarily a bad song. It's just it's bad because it's not a Machine Head song and doesn't belong here.
Yeah. I won't say it's the worst Machine Head song ever. We'll get to that. But it does feel like I use this analogy a lot. It's like I ordered ice cream and instead I get a pizza. Although this time it's not New York pizza, it's leftover Domino's pizza.
And funny you mention ice cream, especially with that ice cream truck sounding intro.
Seriously, but, like what? I don't understand half of the arrangements on this track.
My thing that I found made in bad faith about the song was Rob's use of certain slurs on this track. Yeah, did you guys not listen to Slanderous on The Blackening? Like, I feel like people who are going like, oh, you called out Phil Anselmo for being racist, but you're using the N-word and the other F-word. Well, he used it on Slanderous, and you loved that song. I still love that song, and that's a way superior song, but that's just, you know, for me, purely a songwriting preference and, you know, just a better sounding album and track. But yeah, Bastards. And to kind of drive the point home of how much of a dud this song is, Phil Demmel said in an interview about a year after this album came out that basically Rob was the only person in the band who wanted it to be on the album.
That says a lot.
Yeah. And that's a, like, here's the thing. If Rob had just kept it as a track that he put out on YouTube after Trump got unfortunately elected, I was accepting of it at the time. But now that I know it's on a Machine Head album, dude, it's a classic case of one of these things is not like the others. One of these things just does not belong.
Yep.
We get a Phil Demmel written track, especially because I told you I was listening to that one interview from him. Yeah, the music on Hope Begets Hope is awesome.
Yeah. Again, not necessarily a great song, but I just said earlier how Phil's musicianship saves a lot of this record, and I'm happy to learn that this is like one of his like specific contributions.
Oh yeah, because the guy never half-asses a thing in this band. Like, he clearly actually cares about the riffs he writes, the way he composes solos, and just even lyrics on previous albums have just... The guy's just an underappreciated songwriter in the world of metal. So I'm just like, Rob, why are you limiting him? It's infuriating, but we'll touch on that more, I guess, when we finish talking about the album. But Hope Begets Hope is a song that is good for this album. And at least it gets you closer to the end.
Yeah. This is like the speed ramp that gets to probably the best song on the record. And we're almost there, guys. Don't worry.
Oh, at least. Screaming at the Sun, though, got some good riffs on it. It's got a unique opening, at least. Weird enough, the song doesn't really have much of a chorus that jumps out at me.
Is this like just a case of of riffs that kind of cobble together to form a song?
Not really, but it is kind of a sign we are getting closer to the filler territory towards the end of the album. I know you're not as big of a fan of this one. It seems like we're kind of breezing through it, but some of these songs, honestly, guys, we just don't have much to say. But Behind a Mask, I actually like this one.
Sell me on it, because this is not, to me, I won't say it's as bad as Bastards, but, and again, I have to stress, all of the band members in Machine Head are like very talented musicians. I just wasn't as high on this track as I was a few of the others.
To throw you a bit of a bone, no, it's not as heartbreaking as something like, say, The Burning Red. It's not a musical masterpiece the way Descend the Shades of Night is. It doesn't even come close to like Darkness Within or Sail Into the Black, but a good Black Sabbath style ballad I can't turn down, especially considering I've said this before, Volume 4 is my favorite Black Sabbath album. Changes is a great song. A song like this in that kind of a vein, I can get behind.
All right. Yeah, I can see, I can see what you hear in this now.
Yeah, again, it's not, I wouldn't rank it up there again with the title track from The Burning Red or like Descend the Shades of Night or something, but you know, it's definitely an album highlight at least.
I think that's fair.
We get to a song that's not just good for this album, a song that's genuinely good.
Heavy Lies the Crown.
Ooh, this is definitely one Phil Demmel had a lot involved with.
This sounds like as close as we're going to get to, you kind of already called it out, Sail Into the Black or Darkness Within.
Not so much Darkness Within, but more just getting back to classic Machine Head of let's cave your face in.
And this is the reason why I still am a fan of them. Because I know they have a song like this, like, within them.
Yeah, that's mainly the infuriating thing about Catharsis, is just that you know the band that you love deep down is still in there somewhere. It's just, it happens to be buried in between songs like Bastards and Raise and Grind You Down, but let's not jump too far ahead. Heavy Lies the Crown, though. This is a case where them actually working with the let's not entirely play fast, but when it does kick into that thrash part, it's a flawless payoff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean the solos are ripping on it. It's classic Machine Head.
Basically, yeah. And it has a lot of like the epic like value, not just because they have like violins and violas and like basically just an entire string section during the slower parts, but like I could totally see this, like this song, you know, like slid on in one of the earlier albums, like Bloodstone and Diamonds.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too far out of place on that album, or maybe even Unto the Locust. But yeah, and it's also one of the few times on this album the lyrical content doesn't get either embarrassing, gross, or just poor. So at least it definitely has that going for it in that sense. Psychotic, this is where we get into the filler territory, guys, because I really do feel that if you had gut the last four songs on here and Gut Bastards, maybe put in a couple of heavier tunes on it. Yeah, you'd have some clunkers in terms of lyrics, but you'd have better songs as a result. And maybe a better album.
Yeah, and anything that like tightens the pace and the flow of this record, it wouldn't put it like in golden era status, but it would be like somewhere in the middle.
Hey, a solid 7 out of 10 is better than a mild 5.
True.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about Psychotic. It has some decent riffy bits to it. Has a great solo from Phil on it, but yeah, I don't have too much to say about that one. Do you?
All I have in my notes are not bad.
Yeah, that's its biggest crime, is just it's not bad.
And I kind of said something similar on Grind You Down, because it kind of feels like one of those been there, done that tracks, both lyrically and sonically.
I said it best to you. This song was better when it was called Beneath the Silt.
Accurate.
Yeah, especially just like with the heavily dance. That's the other thing that I'm noticing too, because Rob and Jared both do a, they call it Electric Happy Hour, where it's basically just the two of them playing in the studio to a drum track. It's cool. They do full album playthroughs and just random covers of whatever they're in the mood for. They frequent, mostly on anniversaries, they do Catharsis. And they don't even play this album front to back, just because each song has its, at least good chunks of the album, I should say, not each individual song, but like certain songs, they just play the album out of sequential order because the tunings are so all over the place that it's just kind of like, there's kind of a reason I said that Catharsis barely has a subgenre in metal beyond maybe.
It's just kind of vaguely metal.
Like, yeah, it's metal, obviously. It's, you could call it groove, but one minute you have a thrashy song like Volatile or Heavy Lies the Crown, then you get an acoustic ballad like Behind a Mask, then you get Triple Beam, which is a straight up nu metal song, Bastards being, well, Bastards. Yeah, this album just is all over the place, even with its guitar tunings. Like, it's, if it at least stuck to a tuning and had something identifiable about it, it'd have a little bit more going for it, I would say.
Yeah. I think directionless is the best word to describe this.
Oh, exactly. Even in interviews, Rob wasn't even sure how this album was going to turn out how it did.
You know when you're in trouble when you don't even know the finished product.
The next two songs are Trolls. Razorblade Smile is basically just them making bad dick jokes the entire time.
At least Dave gets to do the intro, and he's Dave, so it's great. But yeah,
obviously.
But then the rest of the song is just like, oh yeah, dick jokes.
Yeah. Which, I mean, to be fair, that is kind of, at least that was the point. And, you know, even in one interview I watched after Phil had quit the band, he said that, yeah, Rob takes all the shit for the lyrics on this, but it was actually just all of us kind of going like, hey, have we said boner in this song yet? Have we said boner yet? Okay, we're adding it. So, you know, at least it's kind of a novelty in that regard, I guess, but it's just, again, musically, it's just kind of whatever, I guess. Some riffs, I guess you could retool into a better song. Then we get Bastards Part 2, and that's the end of the album.
Oh, yeah, Eulogy. This song is kind of a droner.
It's an industrial version of Bastards, which, you know, kind of makes sense since Reese Fulber, again, of Fear Factory fame. Well, Fear Factory production fame, I should say. he does some production work on this, so it kind of makes sense. I completely go, this is a Rob Flynn, Reese Fulber track.
I don't even remember hearing the band on this one. It just kind of sounds one note to me.
I had just thought of this right before we started recording. I'm positive I sent this to you like a while back, but I sent you the song The Permanent Decay.
Sort of remember that.
Okay, well, this is Phil Demmel and Dave McLean, like 2 years after leaving Machine Head. Basically, what they did was they had this song written and they submitted it for Catharsis, but Rob basically just said, no, we're not going to put a heavier song like this on the album. But once they were out of the band, they were both like, hey, let's make something actually heavy again. So they got David Ellefson from Megadeth, formerly of Megadeth, and Brandon from Bleeding Through, because Phil Demmel's married to Marta from Bleeding Through, and obviously she could have been like, hey, go sing for Phil's song, because that song is basically just an indication of, Rob, what the fuck were you thinking with this album? Like, I might save this to kind of bookend our feelings on the album, but man, this thing's just kind of a misguided mess, and I don't know what else to. The thing that mostly angers me about this album is just that it made Phil and Dave quit the band.
Yeah, and I don't, that like, that's not even conjecture. They have expressed on the record their displeasure with the, like, this recording process.
And I can't really blame them. Like, even at the last show that Phil played at, when they're playing Halo and they get to that twin guitar part towards the end and the "and I won't pray for you" section, you can tell Phil is choked, that he's like, these are the last notes I'm playing with this band and I feel awful, but I need to quit for my own sanity. Because that's the biggest crime with this album, is that it drove away Rob Flynn's two best songwriters.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but for better or for worse, that's not actually the end of the band.
At the time, it was for the worst. Oh, bloody hell.
Oh, yeah, no, like, the actual losing of Phil and Dave, that's a huge blow. Like, I don't know how any band would have survived this.
Well, the main thing, I mainly said that because, guys, we have another song to talk about, and I love this band. I have many things to defend from this band. I have defended low points from this band. I've got no defense of this.
Okay, so we're actually going to talk about Do or Die.
So I just want to make this clear, because Vogue from Decapitated is now in Machine Head, and Matt Alston from Devilment, Danny from Cradle of Filth's side project, they've taken Phil and Dave's spots in the band, but they have, beyond being in the music video for this song, it's mainly a Rob, Jared, and Carlos Cruz, the drummer for Warbringer and Power Trip. This is their mess. And I purely blame Rob for tanking this track.
This is where I would kind of have to ask, is Machine Head still even like a band, or have they become kind of like a Nine Inch Nails, where it's like Rob Flynn is where the buck stops?
I get the direction you're going with it. I would use like a more, you know, more on the extreme metal side of things example, but I get where you're coming from and what you mean. And I, in that sense, yeah, I'd agree with it because, oh, holy shit, does the, even the music on this, I've got nothing for. Like, even, yeah, it's a heavier sounding song, obviously. Yeah, it's angrier sounding. That doesn't make it a better listen because musically it goes from a very, I'd hate to say this about thrash, but it's a very standard thrash section, down-tuned with a lazy breakdown with a random neoclassical part reminding you of, oh yeah, we're the band that wrote Through the Ashes of Empires, The Blackening, Locust, Bloodstone. And then we're back to aping Die Motherfucker Die by Dope, which in itself is a ripoff of a Two Live Crew song. This song is just, it's enraging. It's angering, especially because, Rob, I'm not saying this just to shit on you. I'm not some troll who just, you know, hates on you for, you know, bashing, oh, you said bad things about Trump. Where? Like, no, I've loved this band since I was 16, at least. I've defended low points like The Burning Red. I love this band, and it doesn't bring me any pleasure to dunk on a song like Do or Die, but when it's this fucking bad... Ugh.
Yeah, that's where I am with this. On a very surface level, the music is kind of like what you said. It is fast, it is heavy, but it also kind of sounds like shit. Production wise, the guitar tone is like very, like, staticky and fuzzy in all the wrong places. Frankly, it just doesn't sound as good as, and I know it's unfair, but albums like The Blackening or Unto the Locust. I know it's not fair to, like, compare this song against, like, their two masterpieces, but, like, it, I don't even think it's as good as, like, Burn My Eyes.
I would even go as far as to say that this almost gives American High a run for its money.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm not just trying to be like, OMG, angry reviewer on the internet, but it's just enraging after getting four albums of solid lyrical content that are well thought out and well written.
Yeah,
and then you just get this, like, this should have been a case where Rob set out to prove all of the people wrong that this is just going to be a Rob Flynn solo act from here on out. And this basically just did nothing to dismiss that criticism.
Yeah, basically, that sums it up quite nicely. And I wish I had more to say about Circle of Drain, except it's another example of Rob kind of dropping the ball in terms of actually proving people wrong. And it does just kind of sound like a Rob Flynn solo track.
Actually, I was going to say one more thing about Do or Die and how awful it is, especially for this band. Rob, you don't just badly reference Chimera and Strapping Young Lad in a poorly rapped verse. You also reference one of the best Nas songs, Ether, in the worst possible way that doesn't even make sense. That also enrages me. So, yeah, I don't have much to say about Circle of the Drain. I've heard it twice and it's been in one ear, out the other.
It is just kind of generic. It's just kind of generic metal-ish
stuff. It's Machine Head going after that radio single again, which was the problem that almost caused a breakup.
Much like an Entourage, where Ari Gold says to Vince, "No more indies, Radiohead. No more radio singles."
I guess to kind of bring it around after an episode that infuriated us. You know what? I have hope for this next album.
Me too.
I will say that.
I would like to hear a little bit more information about when the album is coming out, so I have something to look forward to. But last year, they did release an EP called
Arrows and Words from the Sky.
Yeah.
I was actually going to get us to save our thoughts on those three songs until the album was out, but I'm just going to say one sentence and kind of close out my thoughts about, we mainly brought up, is there anybody out there in Do or Die? Because they're two bad songs that basically almost could have gone on this album, but I really feel like Decibel Magazine actually said it the best. None of it feels half-assed. These are clearly well-crafted songs. It's all just so stupid. This is a Super Collider level miss from a band that seemed to have ditched this phase long ago.
I think that sums up Catharsis quite well.
And really, if Become the Firestorm, Rotten, and Arrows and Words from the Sky are any indicator, because apparently those are going to go on the next album, I have hope.
Yeah. We can talk more about those songs if and when they appear on the album, whatever it is even titled.
Actually, I'll say this too. How cool would it be if Rob just got some wild hair up his ass and said, "You know what? I'm going to write songs even better than those three. They won't even go on the album."
I would have the utmost respect for him if that was the case.
Oh, yeah. I think that'd be cool as shit. To end this on a high note, though, like I was mentioning, how about we rank our favorite Machine Head's albums ranked worst to best or best to worst, however you see fit. What's yours, Mike?
Okay, so obviously Supercharger is number one. No, just kidding. number one is honestly a tie between The Blackening and Unto the Locust. I've tried to come up with like which one deserves the top spot, and they're both so good but so different that I couldn't decide. So number one is a tie. Number two, I might have to say Through the Ashes of Empires. Just, if nothing else, this is just, it's an important milestone for the band because this is them kicking in the door and saying, "We're back, motherfuckers."
Exactly.
Next would be Bloodstone and Diamonds. Basically, it's just continuing the musical evolution of the band. And while I don't love it quite as much as The Blackening or Unto the Locust, it's still like a very high quality metal record. Below that would be Burn My Eyes, which I still think is one of the strongest debut records of any band, especially in a year as packed as 1994. Like they just really did a good job like making a name for themselves almost immediately. Then it would be The More Things Change, which is like still a great album, but not as iconic. It's the start of them injecting a little bit of like prog elements, but still not fully cooked. Then it's The Burning Red, then Catharsis, then Supercharger.
Mine might be a little bit closer, but I'm actually going to go worse to just get it out of the way. Supercharger, I've said all that needs to be said about it. Catharsis has its genuinely good moments, but it's also an infuriating album. The Burning Red doesn't deserve even remotely half of the hate it gets, despite some dated moments. The More Things Change even though it's not as good as Burn My Eyes, it's at least still a very well done album. Now we get into the top five. Through the Ashes of Empires at number five, proper comeback for this band, ushers in the era of just great music, great songwriting, great playing, and just a complete commitment to basically proving everybody wrong and just saying that this band is done, they're not as good as they used to be. Totally inspiring album. Bloodstone and Diamonds at number four, just because it's the end of that period of the band where it's like, you know what, they just keep pumping out great album after great album after great album and continuing their evolution. Number three, Burn My Eyes, one of the best metal debuts ever made, up there with Kill 'Em All by Metallica and Show No Mercy by Slayer, and Slipknot's debut for more 90s metal. Then number two and number one, depending on my mood, if you ask me, 1 minute, number two could be The Blackening and number one could be Unto the Locust. Could be vice versa on another day. You just have to ask me. I know that's probably a huge cop out, but you know, I genuinely love these two albums. I've grown up listening to these albums. I've played them nonstop. They're both great. Just go listen to them.
And yeah, that concludes our Machine Head retrospective. Overall, I gotta say this was a fun experience, and I look forward to doing more of these in the future, because I think it's fun to take a deep dive into a lot of our favorite bands' discographies. We won't do it like this style every time, but for some bands that actually have a story to their career, it is important to take things one album at a time.
Yeah, and in the case of Machine Head, it's just like, well, you can't really just summarize some of these albums in just a couple of words. Like, even, you know, even if you get clunkers like Catharsis or Supercharger, you get moments, you get high points like The Blackening and Burn My Eyes, and then you get to appreciate the other great albums like Under the Locust and The More Things Change. I mean, Machine Head, they've given us years of great music. I can at least say that. I'm looking forward to the new album whenever it comes out this year. I hope it's great again.
Same. You want to tease our next project?
Next one's All That Remains. And that one's definitely going to be interesting to talk about for different reasons.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to where that discussion is going. But for now, Nick, where can everyone find you online?
Super Saiyan Death Metal God on Instagram. As well, Catherine Isabel from Ginger Snaps is streaming on Twitch again. I am a mod for her. Come say hi in the Twitch chat. Come hang out. She is playing Far Cry 5 right now. And yeah, just come play some Goat Scream clips at her.
Nice. And you guys can find me on Twitter at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can find me in all the various Facebook groups just at my name. You can check out Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. You can also find us on Podchaser, listen to all of our podcasts on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. And last but not least, everything can be found at renegadepopculture.com. Need an escape? So do we. That'll do it for this episode of Renegade Jukebox. We will catch you guys later. Peace out.